Up next from the Stanford Social Innovation Review, a panel of online giving pioneers discusses the nuts and bolts of creating an internet-based philanthropic market.
On Social Innovation Conversations. Hi, I'm Eric Nee, the managing editor of the Stanford Social Innovation Review.
And I'm Chris Deigelmeyer, the executive director of the Center for Social Innovation at the Stanford Graduate School of Business.
Welcome to Social Innovation Conversations. Today, we're bringing you a new presentation in the Stanford Social Innovation Review Talks series. Stanford Social Innovation Review provides leaders in the nonprofit, government, and business sectors with the ideas, tools, and skills needed to solve social problems. For more information, visit us online at ssireview.org.
And now, here is our presentation in the Stanford Social Innovation Review Talk series.
So what we're going to do next is have a panel discussion with representatives from four online giving sites, which will be introduced to you by our moderator, Lucy Bernholtz. Lucy's somebody who's been involved in the philanthropic sector for quite a few years. She's also somebody who's very savvy about the technology and technology's impact on philanthropy and nonprofits. She is the founder and president of Blueprint Research and Design, which is a strategy consulting firm in San Francisco that works with philanthropic individuals and foundations to achieve their missions. She is also an active blogger. She has a blog called Philanthropy 2173, which I would encourage you to read. She also blogs on SSIR's website, so you could also read it there. We have on our, just to give a little plug for our website, we have about 16 or 17 active bloggers, Lucy being one of them. Jessica Flannery, who's one of the co-founders of Kiva, also blogs on our website. Lucy is also a multimedia person. She is the executive producer of the Giving Channel on Fora TV and is a visiting scholar here at the School of Business. So I'll leave it to Lucy to introduce the panelists. Lucy?
Thanks, Eric. But my colleagues here, let me introduce them from my left to the end here. We have Venkat Krishnan, who is the founder and director of Give India, founded in 2000. $12 million given so far, and a few hundred thousand, 30,000 unique visitors monthly. I'm going to give you the stats that I have. I don't have complete stats on their sites. Next to Venkat is Clam Lawrence, who's the director of operations at eBay GivingWorks / MissionFish. Next to Clam is Carol Tappenden, co-founder and managing director of Greater Good South Africa and the South African Social Investment Exchange. Greater Good gets about 12,000 unique visitors monthly. And then next to Carol at the end of the row is Tom Williams, the founder and CEO of Give Meaning, which has driven about $3.4 million in gifts since 2006, about 150,000 unique visitors monthly. I wanted to focus on the number of visitors to the sites monthly because of Premal's comment a minute ago that if you think about these giving marketplaces in the greater e-commerce world, you're looking at 3% conversion rates, which means that 3% of the people who come to the site, who even find the site, actually take action there, and you start to realize the size of the outreach and number of visitors you'd need to be able to drive to your site to start actually driving these dollar figures. I also brought it up because those of you who know my work or those of you from more traditional foundations know that one of the challenges in philanthropy is figuring out what Randy Commissar mentioned earlier as the right proxy measures. So as we start to think about the role that these giving marketplaces are playing, what do we want to measure them by? Is it the number of people who know about them, the number of people who take action there, the number of dollars they drive, the number of people they help? What do we want to be looking at? That said, and before I jump in with the panel, I was asked to make it clear, this is online giving marketplaces 101, which since I was here for the morning sessions and heard Randy and Mari and Lloyd and Premal, I feel like, okay, now you've gone to graduate school and we're going to take you back to the basics, but that's okay. You know, it's a new way of doing higher ed. Let me give you a couple of the basic features, if you will, or the commonalities of online giving marketplaces so that we can be somewhat confident that we're all talking about the same things. One of the things that these marketplaces do is facilitate one-to-one transactions between someone with financial resources and someone doing something, either a social entrepreneur or a social activist, social change person somewhere else in the world. So it's a one-to-one transaction between financial resources and action. There are feedback loops. Again, we've heard various information about those, but there's some way of getting information from the field, from the person doing something with the money, to the person providing the money. There's a focus on transparency related to that feedback loop, but it goes beyond that, as you heard again from the folks at Kiva, who are trying to be incredibly open about what's working and what's not in their business model and in their site in general. There's donor choice. The person coming to the site makes a somewhat informed decision, or by somewhat I mean various degrees of information available, choice about what they're going to support, what they're either going to lend money to if it's through a site like Kiva, what they're going to give money to if it's one of these other sites. There's a way in which the marketplace serves to aggregate those individual transactions, some of which are very small. And then an important piece of this, which is of particular interest to me, but I don't think gets talked about quite enough in this, is that these are not just marketplaces of money, they're marketplaces of information, flowing in many directions, but that definitely are part of those one-to-one interactions. So with those basic commonalities, if that can suffice as our online giving marketplace 101, from my perspective at least, let me turn to our experts here. And ask you each what your organization is doing and what differentiates it from the others, both on the panel and in the room and out there that may be in development. Why don't I start at the end with Tom?
Sure. So our organization exists to reduce the pain for fundraisers. But what we're also trying to do is redefine what it means to be a fundraiser. So we believe that every organization has a bunch of untapped evangelists, to use Apple's word, people that are really passionate about what that organization does and that have social networks of friends, family, whatever, and they're just actually waiting for a moment to actually reach out to that network and talk about why they're passionate about that organization. What they need is some kind of catalyst. And, you know, just raising money for an organization isn't necessarily a catalyst, but a specific outcome that their favorite organization needs to accomplish in order for that organization to continue doing that good work. An example here in California was a soup kitchen, which actually needed to replace its stove. It needed $2,000 to get a new stove. And so an individual that knew that soup kitchen came online and said, look, I'd like to get this soup kitchen a new stove. I can't do it myself, but collectively amongst this group of friends and family, we can do this. So she created her page. She said, this $2,000 gets a stove. And she emailed out all of her friends a link to the page at Give Meaning. And within a couple of weeks, they had raised the $2,000. But more than that, what they did after that was they uploaded pictures of the stove being installed. They created a blog showing, you know, the impact of that. They created a little video of people actually eating soup from the new stove. And so what happened in that was is that that person who was the fundraiser, you know, invited her friends who, as a result of celebrating that and having that storytelling, became new friends of that organization. So that's what Give Meaning does.
Great. Thanks, Tom. So everyone's a fundraiser. Carol, tell us about Greater Good South Africa.
So we actually have two online giving marketplaces. It's the Greater Good South Africa marketplace and the South African Social Investment Exchange. Greater Good South Africa's marketplace is trying to make nonprofit organizations in South Africa that much more accessible to South Africans. That's kind of our main target audience, although we do have, in fact, visitors from about 120 countries around the world, interestingly, to our website. And essentially what we're trying to do is look at what resources individuals have available to them and what they can contribute into developing South Africa. And those resources not just being money, but we actually broker services, skills, time, previously loved goods, with everything sort of looking at how it can provide equal value, really creating change within organizations and very much needs driven. So the needs of the organizations are identified in the first instance and then matched up with givers. And then the social investment exchange model is looking at using, what was the term somebody used? Robust program evaluation. essentially what we're doing is looking at how we can look at larger or broader development strategies and work with intermediary organizations who are not able to access social capital. So it's not your bigger brand names, but it's organizations potentially operating out in rural areas who are providing really innovative solutions that are within best practice in development in South Africa. And we then do a due diligence and assessment on that organization and list projects, not unlike a stock exchange, essentially. You can actually buy shares in that project, and then we do long-term monitoring evaluation on that.
Wonderful. So there you've got two kinds of information at use in those two marketplaces.
Yeah.
And a nation focus.
Yeah.
Clam, tell us about eBay, GivingWorks, and Mission Fish.
So Mission Fish is a nonprofit that powers a program on eBay in the US and UK called eBay GivingWorks. And the basic premise here is that there is an awful lot of commerce happening that could be redirected in small part to support social causes. And so what we're trying to do is make it easy for that exchange to take place. We're also trying to leverage that commerce in other ways for the organization. So it can be that there's a seller who's posting their watch and donating a portion of that to a cause that they care about, or that there's an organization who has received a donated watch but can't put it to good use and is going to sell that and monetize it. The overarching umbrella, I think, that we're striving for is the concept of any donor, any gift, any cause. Similar to what Tom and Carol have described, we've tried to make it so that the American Red Crosses of the world can come and leverage their brand and their resources, but similarly that the guinea pig rescues of the world can also come in and be very effective, taking advantage of it.
And also tapping into capital flows of commercial marketplaces in terms of embedding giving into other transactions and using the resources that way. Great, thank you. Venkat, tell us a little bit about GiveIndia, please.
Sure. So, while there's the same common pattern across all of us in terms of, listing organizations, reaching out to donors, giving them the opportunity to make a one-on-one connection, I think the interesting thing for us back there in India is we are also trying to create a culture of giving in the first place. So compared to, say, the United States, where a rapidly successful Kiva at $45 million that they will probably raise this year is still probably fraction of a percentage of the largest fundraisers. As an eight-year-old marketplace, we are already the third largest philanthropy organization in India, raising $5 million a year. So that gives you the scale of the challenge that we have to face. India in the last 20 years has done extremely well, I would say so well that perhaps we don't really need foreign philanthropy any longer as a country. We have enough people in the country who can make the difference that we need, but we have to create that culture of giving. So that's what we are trying to do there, reaching out to people, getting more and more people to give. And at 30,000 donors, 40,000 donors a year, like I said earlier, we're already beginning to make that dent, and hopefully in a few years we get much larger.
And if I can add something to that culture of giving, a lot of what GiveIndia is facilitating, if I'm correct, is giving from corporate employees, right? So there's also
Absolutely.
A connection there. So that's quite a bit of diversity. we've got you all on one panel. I gave four or five bullets of what I thought online giving marketplaces have in common, but we've got two of you who run organizations that are nation-specific. One of you is focused on small gifts and making everyone a fundraiser. There's a focus in South Africa on things beyond money. eBay is building opportunities to monetize all kinds of transactions in ways that support social good. What do you guys actually have in common?
I think you already covered that in your 101, right?
Nothing else? There's nothing else? Is there any other element of the giving marketplace that's important for folks to get a handle on that actually puts you on the same panel?
Well, I would think that one of the things that we have in common is that what's important to all of us is providing donors with as much choice as they can possibly have. I think that's the differentiator between what the mechanisms that were provided in the past and what it is that we're trying to do, an informed choice, essentially.
I think there are quite a few things. One is, obviously, because of the way that our businesses work, there are a lot of operational similarities in how we get these funds from point A to point B and how the specific transactions happen. The underlying dynamics, and the reason that we use the term, giving markets, is because there is this market-based behavior happening between the donor and the cause. to some degree. And then, you know, moreover than anything else, I think that what we see is that our worldview is very common in how we, you know, how we think about these as markets versus, say, we're all professional fundraisers and we're trying to like bring in a bunch of money.
I would also say that the peer-to-peer connection, we are connecting one individual giver with one individual organization. That's, I think, unique across all of us and common across all of us.
But also common in all of us is our desire and our jobs of strengthening individual nonprofits that we serve. We are all marketplaces, and so there's not only the focus on the donor, but it's also the focus on we all have NGOs as our customers as well. And it's about strengthening the individual capacity of those organizations and a passion to do that. I mean, all of us have a very, very specific and deep passion to ensure that from the guinea pigs to the Red Crosses of the world, that all those organizations are strengthened and improved.
It takes us back to Lloyd's comment about the supply and demand issue.
Maybe just adding one more thing that comes to mind is this bottom-up approach to philanthropy that's unique across all of us in common. In the sense, in all cases, it's grassroots organizations coming up with what they see as required on the ground. It's not one large organization sitting here in San Francisco deciding what's needed in Ghana or some other part of the world.
That, and I think that, I mean, essentially across all of us are in some way or another focusing on vulnerable people.
Absolutely.
And or guinea pigs.
So earlier this year, I think it came out in January or February of 2008, Keystone Accountability, which is a UK-based organization, published a report, which I highly recommend, called Online Philanthropy Markets, From Feel-Good Giving to Effective Social Investing. Three of the four sites represented here and several of the ones that have demos in the back were covered in the report. And they asked some key questions about where this whole phenomenon is going. A couple of the questions that the report asked: do markets simply offer a means of mobilizing short-term relief, or could they become effective vehicles for sustainable development? How do online markets currently try to measure the impact of their investments in bringing about change in the world? And how do they present their investment offerings to donors in ways that might cultivate larger number of donors and foster long-term relationships of relatively unrestricted support? So that's what the report was looking at. I want to ask you folks, in your own words, how your organization thinks about this question of short-term giving in relationship to making more sustainable changes or changes in the overall landscape. A little bit of this was touched on in the conversation with Primal about moving into advocacy work, but how does this play out in your organizations?
So I'm happy to start. Similar to India, I think, and unlike the US, where there already is a culture of giving, in South Africa we're beginning to create that. And I think it's why we ended up with two marketplaces. On the one end, we realize that people want to engage and we want to encourage them to engage, but they're not yet ready to think about development and, you know, sort of long-term impact, even though they'd like to see that result. So if we want to connect them, we need to provide them with mechanisms to get involved in some way in their communities. But it is kind of how SASEX, the Social Investment Exchange, was ultimately born, was with us sort of wanting to begin to at least say, introduce the notion of we need to start thinking about, you know, what are the Millennium Development Goals? Are we starting to look at country-specific development imperatives? And how are we using the marketplace and the intermediaries to start feeding into that broader strategy? How can we bring that down into something that individuals particularly can engage with and ultimately start educating them and advocating over a period of time as to the importance of looking at a broader strategy? But I think it's a process, you know. People are not ready to think that long term, to not start thinking of their $50 contribution as being part of a greater $5 million contribution required into creating the greater change, ultimately. You know?
Yeah, I would also kind of bring in what Randy said earlier in the day about, you know, how the wisdom of the crowd's argument. And I would say, you know, who defines what is long-term sustainability at the end of the day? Is it some wise guy sitting there saying, my belief is this is what is long-term sustainable? And if you have a 30,000 donors individually saying that I think educating this child here and now is more important than building sustainable organizations, why won't you let them make that choice?
Coming from the organization side, when I got my start in this, I ran a Boys and Girls Club for a while, and I can tell you that I was completely unconcerned about the long term. I was exclusively focused on keeping the lights on and having snacks for my kids when they came in that day. And so I think that it's through creating these incremental, you know, every person is a fundraiser, every person is a giver opportunities that you can, and then shaping the direction that that takes through thinking about yourself in some of these ways and trying to, you know, as a market maker, point it in the direction that you want it to go. You can accomplish both, but you can't have the long term, of course, without the lights on.
So in these markets, is long-term sustainability just an aggregation of short-term gifts? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, not necessarily. I'm saying leave the choice to the individual donor. So that'll happen. There will be, and there are. For example, in our site, one of the default options is general institutional support. And that does have a certain number of takers. It's about 10% of the donors actually support general institutional support. And maybe that's in line with the expectation of an average donor that 10% should be what the institutional overhead cost should.
But I think it also looks at going beyond gifts. I mean, for us, it's actually very much about how are people getting involved in their communities? Mm-hmm. How is not just giving, but sort of community involvement becoming a part of who you are as a human being? I mean, our premise as an organization is that if we were all involved in our communities and sort of more engaged in the form of, you know, providing skills, just being involved, essentially, we wouldn't have half the issues that we have.
But on that engagement thing, I mean, you know, most of us are focused on, you know, very specific projects or very specific outcomes. So we frame the conversations, but it's actually up to, and I'm not passing the buck, but it's up to the nonprofits to maintain the narrative.
Sure.
So we're creating it, but if the nonprofits are not utilizing the same tools that we're kind of promoting, which is basically just online storytelling, then that audience is going to die. I mean, you know, Lucy, you're a blogger, and you know that, you know, if you stop blogging for a couple of weeks, your audience really attritions. It's the same thing. We create the initial audience, maybe, but if you're not willing to carry that torch, it's going to be snuffed out.
Which I think is an important observation that was touched on early in the first discussion today about the role that the marketplace plays. It's, if you use the farmer's market metaphor, the marketplace brings together the farmers and the customers, but it's not responsible for the quality of the produce of any particular farmer. The farmer is responsible for that. That's what you're saying a little
well, bit. Well, you know, there's, I mean, maybe in I come from Canada, so we're not as litigious, but I mean, no, I think, you know, if,
I wasn't threatening a lawsuit.
But back to the farmer's market analogy, if somebody gets salmonella, then, you know, they're gonna, the word is going to spread that marketplace is not a place that they want to shop at. So to say that it's entirely the responsibility of, you know, that we don't have a role to oversee what's going on, that would be a very incorrect statement.
I think you can tie that back to similarities as well. One of the things that we all feel is important is that we must set a baseline at the very minimum of, you know, expectation for the participants in our marketplaces, and whether that is in-depth screening or just meeting minimal requirements, you know, it's not completely, you know, wide open to anyone who just wants to.
Absolutely. I mean, it is sort of taking it, are we something beyond a marketplace? To some degree we are. Are we more brokers? And anyone who's, any organization that's listed on any of our platforms is to some degree endorsed by us as organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
So there's a reputational risk involved there.
Absolutely.
I don't know that you could just leave a marketplace to do what it does.
Right.
So in that sense, many of us are actually marketplaces and regulators in a sense rolled into one today. Hopefully there will be a wider regulator and then we can be pure marketplaces. But today we're kind of the two rolled into one.
Okay, I'm going to bring that question down a little bit to ask you all, since you've made a good case for the role that you play beyond just simply sort of being an open forum where vendors and purchasers would show up. How do you measure your impact, your organizations?
How do you measure?
I mean, for us, it's very specific, right? We're mostly interested in funds raised, funds passed through to organizations, because we don't have the same challenges that exist in South Africa or in India. We measure our efficacy, our efficiency, using lots of other compound metrics. But at the end of the day, it's about how much money is getting to our organizations.
Right. We use three metrics, actually. First is the amount of money channeled. Second is the number of donors, because like I said at the beginning, for us, creating a culture of giving is a very critical part of what we do. And the third is a very interesting metric. We benchmarked our cost at 9.1% as the upper limit, and we calculate what percentage of our own costs are we recovering directly by charging donors as a very, very key metric, because we believe that the individual donor who gives us 9% of what we pass on to the organization is going to be far, far more demanding out of us in terms of efficiency than, you know, a large grant-making foundation would ever be. So those are the three metrics that we try and track.
And so one of the things that we do is that before you're allowed to fundraise, you have to actually get 100 people to vote for your idea. So the first thing is how many people, you know, submit an idea and get the 100 votes. The second is from the time that they're allowed to fundraise, how much do they fundraise per individual project? And then the third is a much more kind of emotional thing, which, you know, keeps me going every day, is that I just browse the site and go, wow, you know, here's that stove that's empowering that soup kitchen. Here's a school. I mean, it's pretty easy to see the impact by just the nature of these projects.
So, Carol, do you want to?
I wouldn't mind.
She's very shy.
I'm very shy. Well, we measure a number of things. Again, I mean, it's a similar sort of things. We also obviously are looking at how much money we raise, how many goods we move, how many volunteer hours. We also look at how many people are getting involved and how many different kinds of things are the people getting involved in. But in terms of SASX, we actually are beginning to measure actual impact. It's, you know, what kind of difference is the money beginning to make in developing the country.
Wonderful. So all of you, I think, mentioned this role of how many people get involved, something that was talked about in the earlier panels as well. And often when you're talking about online anything, networks and network effects come up. How does that fit in? First of all, what is that from your perspective? What's a network effect? And where does it fit into your business plan or what you're trying to accomplish? Is it related to the culture of giving? Is it simply a function of the internet? What is it?
Well, for us, I mean, we're all about taking one individual and recruiting as many people from that one individual as possible, hoping that a few of those people are inspired by the same story. I mean, it's viral marketing, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, the issue is that we just recently figured out that most of the people who donate to a project on our website can't remember what the project was about. They remember who it was that got them there. Uh-huh. But it was the function of this friend who's known to me asked me to do something, and I'm going to see them Friday night for dinner, and if I haven't completed that action, I'm going to feel kind of, you know, guilty. So it's the, you know, we've purposefully stoked the fire of, you know, just simply friends asking friends, which has been the business of fundraising since day one, and just migrating that online. So for us, it's very purposeful, the network effect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, and I think it's... Yeah, I mean, I would just reiterate that we purposely do that, and essentially it's how you start advocating is around what people have in common and how you tap into one network to actually move on to a variety of people. I mean, they are your best ambassadors at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. There's people within a network who speak well of you.
Yeah. We have the fortunate position of being able to leverage, you know, perhaps the paragon of network effects and what those can accomplish. And but what's interesting for us is that we see a couple of different types of network effects at work. One are the types of cooperative or, you know, positive encouragement network effects that Tom mentioned, where, you know, I want to raise money for breast cancer awareness, and so I'm going to encourage all of my eBay selling friends to do the same this week. But the other type of network effect we see is a competitive network effect, where people who are selling on eBay to make their living want to know why their teapots are getting 15% less, say, for example, than someone else who's selling the exact same teapot. And so we did a focus group a year and a half ago, and we had a woman who said, my teapots were getting a lot less money than my nearest competitors, and the difference was that she was selling and giving 10% to charity. Hmm. And so she said, I started selling and giving 10% to an organization I care about, and my sale price went up 30%. So for her, it's not just the fact that I'm encouraging my friends, it's that I'm being encouraged by what I see other people doing and I want to keep up with them.
That takes corporate social responsibility to a whole new level.
Absolutely.
You know, and when you really get down to it, that's one of the things that we're so excited about, is that giving works in a lot of ways, democratizes corporate social responsibility, and goes back to the heart of that, any donor, any gift, any cause. You know, any organization can participate, any donor can give as little as $5 and take advantage of that effect.
Yeah. In our case, I would say that we've done nothing on networking so far. We have largely built individual relationships with each of the donors that we have directly. What I'm going to take back from this experience on the three-day meeting is what can we do locally within India that leverages our kind of networks, because, you know, Facebook doesn't exist in it. I mean, it's there, but you'll have maybe 50,000 users, something like that. So networking, the way it happens in the US and the way it happens for us in India is totally different. Mm. It's a lot more family-driven networking, mm-hmm. social, those kind of networks that we have back there. So we've got to go back and think mm-hmm. of how we're going to possibly leverage those kind of networks.
So as you try to create a culture of giving, you have to think about the culturally appropriate
using the
tools.
Appropriate culture of networking.
I would say a similar thing. I mean, I think that one of the things, the challenges that we face in India and in South Africa is that internet penetration is not quite as great there as it is here. So things like Facebook and the sort of social networking are not part of people's everyday culture. So partly our advocacy is around getting people to actually come online and use the internet and make,
Right. Television shows, reality television shows in India are huge of late. And so last few weeks, we've actually been wondering what's the best way to try and leverage those kind of networks that get created. Mm-hmm. Lots of folk watching a particular type of television show, kind of bonding together around that and stuff like that. So we'll perhaps have to look for ways leveraging those networks.
I'm going to ask anyone who's got questions to please step up to the mic.
Yeah, hi, my name's Dan Siegel. I'm co-president of YouthGive, which is an online marketplace for young people to get involved in giving. And partly the way we do that is having young people go out and get the stories of nonprofits and NGOs to build our giving menu. And I have a question really for the two international participants. We're partnering with Give India to have, Indian NGOs on our website told through the eyes of young people to market here in the U.S. And it's partly a question of how much do you see the U.S. as a market for donors here giving to non-NGOs in your countries? And can you envision a time where, marketing these markets is done in a rational way where there's an alliance of these giving marketplaces that could be marketed to, say, community foundations, corporate foundations, the giving infrastructure in this country where you can create some kind of interface?
Okay. A couple of things. First is, in our case, for example, close to 90% of our giving happens locally within India. It's linked to our mission of trying to get Indians within India to start giving back to the country. Having said which, once you've built the platform, once you've got the organizations up there, we'd be more than happy to have people all over the world reaching out and supporting those organizations as well. We would look primarily at, partnerships with organizations like yours or Global Giving or others as ways to reach out into these countries. I don't think we would look at trying to build a large infrastructure in a country like the US with, India-specific destination as a giving kind of form.
I would agree. I mean, it's a similar sort of thing. Our main focus is around trying to get South Africans involved in South Africa. But obviously, people from outside do support us. And certainly in all our globe-trotting that we've been doing lately, people are keen to support our work and are quite liking the mechanisms we're using. So, we're quite happy to enable people to tap into the information that we're providing, certainly.
Let's switch over to this mic, please.
Hi, I'm Steve Wright from Salesforce.com Foundation. I'm curious if there's something about the similarities of your four organizations or the broad group here of online marketplaces, be it operational, infrastructure, what it is you're trying to achieve in the world. There's something about your similarities that can be leveraged for a network effect within your own community. And have you sort of thought about those dynamics?
I think that we have. I mean, part of the meeting that we've had for the past 2 days, and this being the third year of those meetings, is about trying to find that. It may not necessarily be, Mission Fish has developed this fabulous technical platform that Give India can use and abandon their own. Maybe there's that. But more than anything, it's identifying the commonalities and the common experiences. I wanted to follow on the question about giving from the U.S. to other countries. There are two groups in our market, actually, that do primarily fundraise or largely fundraise from diaspora givers outside of the countries that they're in. And so over the course of conversations, it's become very clear that that's an opportunity for some of the other markets to begin to explore. So we're certainly trying to find those, I think.
Absolutely.
My name is Natalie Nasseri from Women for Growth. My question is for Tom Williams. I'm very actually interested in the idea that you recruit one person, one individual, or it might be more than one individual, and tap into their storytelling or their power in order to reach out to their friends and to their relatives to fund much larger projects or much larger situations that is micro, for example, that has been used for micro enterprises. That's the area that I do most of my research because I actually see real development for a long-term sustainability in that area. My question to you is, do you think that the same approach can be used, and I'm talking now more into international development or larger scale development, that we would actually recruit people who then become these runners with the ideas or whatever, that then they start recruiting other people, that will bring the pool of people that we do need in order for larger scale projects or funding a social enterprise, for example, or things like that. That's my main concern and question.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's happening most, I'd say the majority. In fact, we've actually done advertising campaigns in specific communities saying, hey, this is a platform to help empower your own Western, like, you know, American or Canadian city. And all the projects, almost all of them, are international development projects. So we're doing a majority of them, which is kind of to my chagrin. I would like to see a balance of domestic appeals. I guess there's just kind of this mentality that a dollar goes further, and perhaps it does. But I think that the concern that I have with all this is based on the fact that a lot of people don't, as I earlier said, they can't remember what specifically they were funding, but they remembered who did it. The problem with that is that there's, you know, there's a guy who, you know, had that famous slogan that I think you guys know, he's had mission accomplished. And the problem with these projects is mission accomplished. The fundraiser is a busy person. They are very, very charged to accomplish it. But once it's done, they forget about it, and so does that network. And the consequences of that are schools that have been built but without books or without feeding programs. And again, it's about, we have a responsibility, I think, to some extent to ensure the long-term sustainability of the projects that are listed, but it's again back to that storytelling. Is there's an audience here, but what are you going to do with this audience? And if you don't feed that audience, it will go away.
That also, if I may, Tom, speaks to the importance of sustaining the network. But that may be one of the roles for the marketplaces that's common to all of you and distinctive from other elements of the philanthropy landscape. Let's go to this mic over here, please.
My name's Nick Allen from Donor Digital. My question actually follows up this last bit of discussion. I was at a focus group with one of our clients, Amnesty International, a couple of weeks ago in New York. And Amnesty's donors, and these were both online donors and direct mail donors, they don't follow very closely what the organization is doing, even though we know they've received lots of mail and lots of email. They just believe in the organization, and their attitude is, I believe in Amnesty, and I know Amnesty will use my money effectively. I don't need to know that much. Now, that approach, obviously, is very, very different than the approach of Kiva or Global Giving or some of your organizations where you're letting the donor pick a very specific project somewhere. How do those two come together? Do they need to? I mean, do you need to build more of the brand in order to get people to become sustaining donors to the online marketplaces, or is it just a transactional passing in the night of somebody?
I'll start this one. I think that the short answer is that if you're going to be effective, you've got to speak to both motives, right? You're really talking about what is it that is pushing the donor or the buyer to engage in this. And so you've got some people who do want to go very deep and who do want to establish a very direct and personal relationship with the project or the entrepreneur that they're providing that loan for. And then you have other people who only want to tick the box and who have no idea what they tick the box for, but they just, whether it's to assuage guilt or because they feel like it's the right thing to do, it's the holidays, it's in memory of their grandmother. So if you're going to be effective, it's doing both of those things and being flexible enough to accommodate that is what really allows you to be effective.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. I think to some degree we're providing the transaction mechanism, but we are also trying to get people to start reading the reports and actually pay attention to what's happening. And I think it's essential, actually. It can't be that the NGO sector can start operating all independently on its own, and as long as they're doing their good work and give us, you know, financial reports that don't show that the CEO's run away with all the money, you know, that's perfectly fine. It actually just is, yeah.
Yeah, I think there are two aspects of evolution. First is the aspect of donor evolution, because as donors evolve further, they will tend to take more and more of, you know, general funding or generic funding approaches than specific project funding approaches. Second is of giving evolution itself. So in countries like India and South Africa where giving cultures are not yet built, you have to first create the climate of trust that's perhaps built through direct tangible funding. And then once that relationship of trust is built, you can evolve into more generic funding over a period of time.
Wonderful. Let's go back to this side.
I'm curious what you're doing to drive traffic to your sites. And I understand Tom's, you know, getting friends, turning on other friends and bringing them in, and I understand how effective that is. But there's some limits to that, and even turning on that network is a trick in itself. So if there are things you're doing there, I'd love to hear them. And I'm Tony Stainer with Water Partners that does clean water and sanitation in developing countries.
Scale.
Give you your $5 now.
So you now owe $5 to a project on greater good.
Done.
I think that's the biggest challenge all of us are facing. What do we do to drive more and more traffic on shoestring budgets? I was quite impressed with what Premal said earlier in the morning, and I'm going to take a few lessons from that and go and try and do what we can. Right now, our outreach is significantly offline. Most of our way of customer acquisition actually by meeting people at their workplaces, one-to-one at their desks. It's a very cost-intensive way, but keep in mind, labor cost in India, even today, is much cheaper than it is, say, in the US, and our cost of fundraising even now is just about 6% on that kind of an approach, so it actually works for us. So we're still using a lot of that. Other than that, we use Google AdWords quite a bit. Google has been kind enough to give a lot of us free AdWords, so we write that as much as we can.
So we also do a variety of things. We're still using quite a lot of traditional media, I think, just again, because internet penetration is just not as great as it could be and will be in the future, I'm sure. But we do, we write thought pieces, we use public relations, we sort of are trying to establish ourselves as the experts around giving. When you think giving, you think greater good, or you think SASX in some sort of way. We do radio shows, we run campaigns, you know, it's a variety of kind of ways of hooking people into getting involved.
On that topic, one of the things that works really well for us is SEO. So, for example, recently we had no projects in Cameroon, but when the first project got listed, because we are very good with search engine optimization, so when somebody's typing in Cameroon and fundraising, they found that first page. And so as a result, we now have, I think, 5 or 6 projects on in Cameroon, and I bet that in, you know, a couple of months from now, we'll probably have 30 or 40. And so if you're doing water projects, if you're creating a blog where you're talking about water, if people are looking for, you know, water treatment, well, I don't know your program, but if you're creating content around that, it's more likely that people searching for things to donate as it relates to water will find your site.
For us, I'd say that the relevant answer is, what are our organizations doing to leverage us? Charity auctions can be an effective way of getting in local media or in vertical media, depending on what you're trying to accomplish. And then moreover, it's also an easy way to attract supporters from within a larger e-commerce community that you may not realize are out there, people on eBay who care about clean water. And so I would say rather than that we can be a way of attracting those people to you.
Great. This side.
Yes, Grant LaRouche, the IDO Foundation. My question actually is something that I think Lucy has written on in the past, and it's a bit of a two-part. Do you all feel that you're creating new capital for nonprofits or for the sector? And it's maybe somewhat of a U.S.-based question, as we have more robust citizen base already established. But do you feel like you're creating new or funds, or are you creating a new mode to give? And secondly, if you do feel that you're creating new funds, what's the key insight or lever that's making that change or establishing new funds?
Is the pie bigger, or are you shifting the pie?
I think that the short answer is our goal is to create new funds. You know, something along the order of $60 billion a year worth of stuff is moving through the global eBay platform. And there's probably a very small percentage of that that's being donated to charity out of the goodness of the seller's heart. And so our goal is to create value for the seller, right? Make that item worth more, and therefore be able to leverage a little bit of that for the cause. So that is explicitly our goal. We want there to be more money, more unrestricted funding specifically for organizations. I think also for us, we are a new channel in many ways, right? If you're a goodwill, you're able to use our platform effectively for free to get more money out of the school books that you're selling for 10 cents in your store, because those school books happen to be worth $60 to a student in Topeka. So for us, it's both.
I would say probably both as well. I mean, certainly we don't have a pie in South Africa.
Exactly.
We're baking a pie, but we also, I think that there are a lot of traditional donors or high net worth individuals, particularly corporations, who are buying into not only the marketplace idea, but also our strategies around looking at evaluation, monitoring, and being able to feedback that information. And the more people begin to understand the process and realize that they can channel their funds through us, the more they're wanting to do that because they can actually be guaranteed of some kind of report back that they can understand. And you know, so they're beginning to see us more as the trusted platform as opposed to just having the direct relationship with the NGOs.
There's no question that in countries like these two platforms, India, South Africa, as well as other developing countries, they're actually creating the pie. They're actually baking the pie. Like, you know, but I don't. We've been kind of collectively beaten with a humble stick about how much money is raised each year and how much money is flowing through our collective platforms, which is, you know, infinitesimally small. So I don't think that from a Western donor perspective, we would have any credibility to say that, yes, we are increasing the pie because, you know, we're not even crumbs of the pie yet. However, I think that what we're doing is we're resisting the barriers, or rather we're diminishing the barriers that currently exist for a donor to give more or to engage more. By creating the storytelling, we're both satiating but also creating a new demand all the while for this this greater degree of engagement, which somebody on the amnesty issue had raised. Today and the next generation of donors are going to be expecting this, and if you don't deliver on that, they're not going to be trusting your organization to just be doing business as usual.
Thank you.
Over here, please.
Hi. My name is Suzanne Simberg, and I'm a graduate student at the University of Washington. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the different roles that reputation rating systems play in these online markets. Also, some of the positive things, and also maybe some of the negatives.
Sorry, I didn't get the question.
She wants to hear about reputation and rating systems and what role they play in our market.
You can be the moderator, too.
Go ahead.
You know, I would say that this is probably an area where eBay GivingWorks has room for growth. And in particular, it's kind of ironic when you consider that eBay is founded on a reputation system called Feedback. You know, what our donors trust is that we have screened these organizations and that they can count on them being legitimate and reliable, you know, not funding terrorism and not doing anything that we consider out of line with the values of the larger eBay community. However, that said, I think that there is a lot of room for us to try to find ways to provide more information about what the organizations are doing. The challenge is that, and someone said this in one of our meetings yesterday, for us at least, most of our donors say, we want you to have that information, but we don't want to read it, and we're not going to make our decisions based on you having that information. We just want to know it's there. Right. Which is, it's difficult to deploy limited product development resources towards something that you know isn't going to move the needle in any meaningful way. But that said, I think that, I don't want to speak for the whole group, but I think that as a collective, we feel like transparency, to the point that Premal made, is essential to this. And even if it's not going to move the needle, we all do have an obligation as market makers to provide some degree of feedback and of transparency for the person who's giving.
Absolutely.
Right. Our approach to reputation has so far been point to point again. So every time you make a donation as an individual, the organization that you send the money to and the project that you support sends you back a very specific report on how your $10 was used. So it's not a report saying this is how $1,000 was used by our organization, but it actually says your $10 helped educate this child, or your $25 helped sponsor a cataract operation for this person, etc. What we are learning now is we are beginning to build feedback rating systems where we're beginning to rate these organizations on the turnaround time within which they're able to send these reports, the extent of detailing that is there in these reports, etc. And I think gradually we will start building reputation systems starting with this as a base over a period of time.
I mean, we're pretty much there as well. We're sort of in the beginning stages of setting up a rating system for organizations on the Greater Good platform particularly. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's sort of a work in progress. Our one concern about doing it is that we wouldn't necessarily want to be seen to be the ones rating the organizations. It should really be focused on their behavior more than anything
Absolutely.
Else. And we've kind of avoided doing it because we would never want to get to the point where you'd look at an organization as a 3-star rating and an organization as a 5-star rating. What is that based on, essentially? Is that based on bad behavior on greater good, or is the user going to come across that and say, oh, this is a bad organization in general, we should stay away from them? So we've had to think through very carefully how we do that and communicate it in such a way that when a potential donor looks at that organization and sees the rating, that they immediately understand what that pertains to, that it's more around behavior within the marketplace as opposed to them, their effectiveness as an organization.
And that's not necessarily a good measure of their effectiveness at all, right?
Exactly.
One thing that we have thought about is, should we be displaying a count of how many donations has this organization received?
Yeah.
Right? It's obvious. But what does that really mean?
What does it mean? Exactly. Exactly. They're right. Bad. They're, yeah.
And there's another question in the back.
Hi, my name is Zenya, and I'm from Canada Helps. Each of you have talked about a tool that you're providing for a donor, but there's also been recognition on the panel that you'd like to build the capacity of charities, and that's what your work is about. I'd like to know more about what you're doing for the charities. Other than providing a tool online, if you're not providing education or other things that are going to help these charities use your tools, then again, it might go back to the question at the beginning of the day, is the donor the supply or the demand? Because I find that there's a number of small charities that are out there that are really, really interested in what you guys are doing, but simply don't have the means to use your tools, and so how are you helping them?
I'd like to start with that. The issue is not that they don't have the means. It's that there is not a known quantum. They can't, first of all, most organizations, there's 80,000 charities in Canada, there's over 100,000, or I think even more than that in the U.S.
A million.
A million, there you go. The majority of these organizations are small. They don't have they're very resource constrained. And so therefore, they're faced with the issue of, I can only do a certain number of things in a day. And right now, because online giving is an unknown quantum, it's a chicken and egg kind of scenario. If they haven't received a lot of money from online giving, why should I invest the resources to try an online giving campaign? I'd rather spend the time on a grant where I know it's going to be a binary win. I'm either going to lose or I'm going to win. And that's a productive effort. Whereas I don't know if I spend that same amount of time in the grant writing online, am I going to raise $500 or $5,000? So one of the things that we are trying to do next year is we're actually looking to work with major funders to help us fund the capacity for somebody to be focused on online giving campaign within certain nonprofits, because unless we free these resources up, human capital resources, they'll never be able to really use these tools, which are, as you say, and as we provide, readily available.
So we are very proactive about working with sort of organizations who don't necessarily have access to us through the internet or through other means. We do quite a lot of community outreach, go out into the rural areas, talk about the work that we do, identify organizations and try to pull them more into the formal system. We prefer that they are registered with one of the government structures because it means that they will have some sort of governance in place. If they're not, we point them in the right direction of the right people, make sure that they get some form of registration. We also, because through the Social Investment Exchange, are trying to pull exactly those kinds of initiatives into the space, are aware that, I mean, it's a rigorous due diligence process. You know, an assessment could take anywhere between 6 weeks and 3 months, and we're talking about things like successioning and, you know, capacity and capabilities and, you know, risks around implementation, and a lot of that stuff kind of goes a bit over their head. We do a lot of education around that, helping them to understand exactly what all of that means, and their own going through that process and understanding our reasons for either pulling them into the system or not pulling them into the system is very educational for them. All of them find it to be a highly educational and useful process. And oftentimes, organizations that are rejected in the first instance end up applying again and are successful at a later stage because they've managed to find someone or some organization that can help them to restructure or strategize around how they can actually develop their own capacity.
Yeah, in our case, actually, you know, a typical nonprofit in India will tell you that it's easier to get $100,000 grant application than to get listed on GiveIndia. It's an extremely, extremely complex and rigorous process of getting listed. But the good thing that happens when an NGO goes through that process of getting listed with us is the process itself is so introspective and reflective that it helps them start thinking about the key issues that they need to worry about. And we also then connect them with various service providers who can kind of help them get that capacity in place. But you know, I would say that if marketplaces can do their one job of getting enough money into the system well, then I think money will build enough capacity building service providers. It's very much like, you know, if you suddenly have a large new industry coming up, like IT or something like that, then the number of institutions offering IT courses automatically grows because the demand for learning IT will grow as well. So same way, we believe that if the amount of money flowing through us grows, then automatically there will be the birth of players who would be willing to help those organizations figure out and build their capacities.
And then making that fact transparent as well.
Absolutely.
Right? Because an organization can be getting a ton of money, but if no one else knows it, then it's not...
Absolutely. You
know. I mean, I have to say that we've tried that. We've actually tried to list projects where it's all about building institutional capacity so that organizations can actually... But getting to the point where donors actually understand the importance of that and enabling an organization, we're just not there yet.
Yeah. That's true. Right. And there's, again, there's some donors who care passionately about that, and often they end up in the foundation world and making decisions there, and then there are other donors who won't. And so that's part of the reason that we made a strategic decision at the outset to focus on unrestricted funding, because we wanted to sort of make it, give the organization the flexibility. And there are risks along with that too, right? You have a lot less transparency about where my $10 went.
Yeah. Right.
But we've chosen to place our trust in the organization. To answer your question, we do a ton of the same types of things, free webinars, lots of free tools. And what we want to do next, I think, is to try to allow our successful organizations to offer peer-to-peer mentoring. Oh, you know, there's, again, another thing that happens very effectively on eBay is that you can go to the community boards and learn from experienced hands how to do this thing called selling on eBay. And we feel like we're missing the mark on that, but would like to do more.
Right. And just to add another quick thing, my colleague Kanchan out there at the back has actually recently struck a partnership with Packard Foundation in India, where we're actually working with Packard Foundation grantees to act, where Packard is building their capacity to get listed on Give India. And you know, our whole approach to foundations is, please look at us as an exit strategy for you. So once you build an organization over a 3 or 4 year period and they've reached a certain capability to sustain themselves, get them listed on our site, you help them build the capacity to do that, and then they will start getting their fund flow through here, and you can start looking at a new set of grantees to work with as well.
Well, thank you. And seeing that there's no other bodies at the mic and fulfilling my dream of playing Gwen Ifill, I'm going to ask the last question, which is, are any of your sites or any of the sites in the room, anybody gone mobile, or is it all still desktop-based?
Mobile.
Text giving?
No, not yet.
Carriers are taking too much of the money.
Yeah.
Aha.
Yeah.
Well, we'll come to that at the second annual Stanford Social Conference on Online Giving Marketplaces. I'm going to give our panelists each the final word, which is to answer the question with the intention that you'll all be around 5 years from now. What are your big goals between now and then, and how can those of us in the audience here help you out in reaching them? And let's start this time with Venkat.
Okay, I'm going to say scale, and scale.
That
takes a time of
$10.
I think our big goal is to really become something more meaningful, because at $5 million a year, we're doing nothing in India. We're still scratching the surface, even though we may be the third largest philanthropic organization. So I think that's the biggest challenge for us. How do we mainstream our work? How do we get into the daily lives of people in India? How do we get them to see that giving is important, and how do we crack that problem? That's clearly the first and foremost priority for us. How can people like you help? I mean, I would definitely encourage as many of you as possible to go and visit our website and be demanding. And I would say this on behalf of all marketplaces, I think the best value you guys can give us is to be highly demanding and push and force us to be as efficient as possible. Because eventually marketplaces, if we succeed, will succeed because you guys will demand far more out of us than an average donor will demand out of a regular grant-making mode.
I think that our goals over the next 5 years are pretty much the same. You know, I'd describe them a little differently. Our goal is 1% of the volume on eBay, which would be $600 million, I think. And more than that, the way that we want to get there is through something that Premal discussed, which was, I don't know that we want to be addictive, necessarily. there's already plenty of that on eBay. But I think we want to be so simple that we're in the mainstream and almost invisible, that it just happens by virtue of the fact that you're there.
So I would say scale as well. Is that 5 points? So as 11. Well as an event can get the money. Okay.
They're playing buzzword bingo.
Yeah, I mean, I think probably our five-year strategy is, and we want Greater Good to be, and SASX essentially as a concept, to be a household name in South Africa. We want people to really start thinking about transparency and grow an understanding, and amongst particularly South African donors, around the importance of demanding transparency and feedback and report, and getting them to have a better sense of ways that they can actually make a difference in the country. How people here can get involved? Well, again, the honesty and your feedback is very helpful, and any introductions into any networks that you might have would be very helpful too. We also are looking at how we can replicate, or have been invited to replicate, our exchange model elsewhere in the world. So if anyone knows of anyone who's interested in getting involved in that, that would be good too.
Wonderful. Yeah. And Tom?
We build Give Meaning to be biodegradable. We don't want to be here in 5 years. We are trying to solve a problem of how to help level the playing field for the smaller organizations to be able to have a piece of brand share. So our job, if we do it well, is that 5 years from now, there doesn't need to be a marketplace, because the individual organizations will have built up groups of long-term committed donors for those organizations, and we don't have a role to play as an intermediary. That would be my goal. How does that happen in the next 5 years? Bring me your nonprofits that you don't want to fund anymore. No, seriously, I mean, one of the things is that, especially with large funders, you know, we want that organization to be less dependent on a small cadre of donors. And the only way that's going to happen is if they increase the network of supporters that know about and care about that organization. So bring us your nonprofits and we'll help them.
Wonderful. Please join me in thanking this panel, Tom, Carol, Prem, Venkat.
You've been listening to a presentation from Stanford Social Innovation Review. Stanford Social Innovation Review provides leaders in the nonprofit, government, and business sectors with the ideas, tools, and skills needed to solve social problems. For more information, visit us online at ssireview.org.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Rob Lepper. Our website editor was Marguerite Rigoglioso. The series producer is Bernadette Clavier.
This is Chris Deigelmeyer
and Eric Nee on Social Innovation Conversations.
Thank you for listening.